Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Property and Local Tax Division to order, please. First order of business is business that we haven't been attending to. We've got four minutes from previous meetings that require approval. I would like to, Representative Carlson, could you move the February 26th joint meeting with the Tax Committee minutes, please? Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Secondly, the March 5th, 2013 minutes. Representative Garofalo has fled the room. Representative Erickson, would you be so kind as to move those minutes?
I will, so.
Thank you, ma'am. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Next, the March 19th minutes, again, a joint committee on taxes. Representative Mahoney, would you be so good as to move those minutes?
I would certainly do so.
Thank you very much, sir. Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. And lastly, the minutes of just the division on March 20th, 2013, in room 10 of the state office building. Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chair, I have the honor to move the minutes.
That's not really required, but a motion is. So thank you very much. Any discussion? Request for a roll call? we'll be dismissed. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, just the same.
You must not have a bill up.
We have a roll call.
Yes, there you go. Representative Swidzinski.
You're right.
Thank you very much, sir. Welcome to the Property and Local Tax Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Want to thank you, the committee, for hearing this bill here today. This is a pretty technical bill.
Why don't we do this first? Representative Torkelson, would you like to move House File 1318 before the Committee for Possible Inclusion in the Division Report?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, yours, Representative Swidzinski.
Yes, the bill before you, House File 1318, is a pretty technical bill. It really relates to the City of Marshall. The City of Marshall last fall in November approved a citywide sales tax on lodging and also beverage, and this is a pretty straightforward bill that really clarifies some language for enactment that was they found a little bit of gray area within the revisor's office. They were looking at some issues. Some of the folks felt that we didn't have to do any changes to the bill as it was laid out, and others felt that we could potentially have some further clarification with this bill. With that, I have Mayor Bob Burns here to testify, and also City Administrator Ben Martegg to kind of get into a little more weeds if that's necessary. So with that.
You've come a great distance. I think we should get into the weeds.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, is it Martegg? Who goes first?
The mayor would like to go first, sir.
Mayor Burns, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Bob Burns, Mayor of the City of Marshall, and thank you, Representative Swidzinski, for the introduction also. As Representative Swidzinski has indicated, the purpose of this bill is to correct any ambiguity that might exist on the implementation date of the food and beverage tax in the City of Marshall. As Representative Swidzinski had indicated, last fall the voters in the City of Marshall overwhelmingly, 60+%, approved the implementation of a local option sales tax. Accompanying that then is a food and beverage tax that was previously authorized both in 2010 and 2011. And there is a bit of ambiguity as far as the implementation date of that. So rather than have that ambiguity, this would just clear that up. So to provide any more detail, I've asked City Administrator Ben Martegg then to provide any technical details, and then we'll stand for any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Martegg, please welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ben Martegg, City Administrator of Marshall. Again, the original bill was approved in 2010, and then we did an extension in 2011-12 to coincide with the voters. I won't reiterate what these two gentlemen just covered, but why it's important to clarify ambiguity is our attorneys that were working with the city, with Kennedy and Graven, have indicated is the city will be issuing debt for the bonds of our regional projects that will be funded through this source. And we like, they really like to have minimized or no risk at all in selling the information to our potential investors in our project, the private bondholders. And so that's why it's very important for us to clarify, even though both our attorneys and their advisor's office believe that the intent is clear, there's some ambiguity on the law, so it just really puts it in place. If you want to get into the details beyond that, I can get into as much detail as you need to on it, but I think for the purposes of really keeping things brief, and I just say that it's some technical corrections clarifying the expenditures and the implementation of it, and I could answer any questions the committee might have on in relation to the tax clarification.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there questions for the author or either of the testifiers? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for counsel. Section 3, counsel, is that a typical correction that's made when we have these kinds of ambiguities in law?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative...
No, I'm not the chair, but thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative... I apologize. This is... this is not the only bill that we've heard that has had this problem. They've done actually everything, but they didn't file with the Secretary of State, and so this just gives them another little bit of time to file with the Secretary of State.
So the job's not over until the paperwork is done?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. Any closing statement you wish to make, Representative Spitzini?
Well, appreciate your report, and thanks for your time.
All right. With that, Representative Torkelson, thank you, sir, renews his motion that House File 1318 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Safe travels. Thank you. Representative Dean. Welcome. The chair will move House File 1680 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Dean, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill before you is House File 1680, and in essence what this bill does is it extends a previous appropriation that was made for tax abatement that was related to the tornado that hit North Minneapolis and other areas of Hennepin County in 2011. So really all it does is it extends the period through until June 30th of 2014. Pretty simple.
It is. Any questions from members? Seeing none, after your opening statement, any closing statement?
Thank you for the support of this bill, and this will be put to good use for people that were impacted by that tornado, which also includes me.
All right. So. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1680 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Dean, thank you very much. Have a good day. So, can we take about the same amount of time on the
this little small bill?
This little. Okay, thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Good luck with that.
With that, the chair moves that House File 2 be before the committee, and that the A130366 delete all amendment be before the committee. Thank you. And to walk through the bill, I am going to ask staff to take lead on that. Ms. Manzi, I think that puts you up first.
Thank you. What?
Ms. Manzi, take a seat. Before you do that, let's just to get everything in the proper order, I'd like to move the A130366 amendment and call for a vote to get the House File 2 in the order to which I prefer. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen. Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 1 is the part of this division report that actually was in House File 2 to begin with, for the most part. It includes the Homestead Credit Refund, which is a expanded version of the Homeowner Property Tax Refund, and changes to the Renter Property Tax Refund. The Homestead Credit Refund is essentially the same as it was in House File 2. The refund is modified to decrease the threshold percentages for homeowners to qualify for the Homestead Credit Refund. The thresholds are lowered to be no more than 2% for, let me make sure that's right, 2.5% for homeowners. And you can see that schedule in the bill on pages 4 and 5. The other thing that happens with the homeowner refunds is that there is a notification of potential eligibility by the Commissioner of Revenue to homeowners who appear to be eligible based on property tax information that the counties will report to the Commissioner of Revenue, and based on past income tax returns that the Department of Revenue has on file. So they will compare the property tax records with the income records and identify homeowners who appear to be eligible but who have not claimed the refund in past years. And then next August, not this August of 2013, but August of 2014, the commissioner will send notifications to the homeowners that they may be able to claim the property tax refund. This is estimated to bring about 100,000 new homeowners into the property tax refund program. So it's a one-time awareness campaign to increase participation. Under current law, the department estimates that about two-thirds of the homeowners who are eligible for the refund actually file for it and claim it. So that's what's happening with the homeowner refund, and it's very similar to what was in House File 2 as introduced, which the division heard earlier this year. The renter property tax refund provisions have changed since what was in House File 2. House File 2 increased the percentage of rent constituting property taxes from 17 to 18%, and then the division heard a series of amendments. Entertained a series of amendments that offered different approaches to the property tax refund. What's in the Delete Everything Amendment here combines two of those amendments, one of which increased the maximum refunds for renters at all income levels, and then the other one decreased the income thresholds for renters to be no higher than the income thresholds proposed for homeowners on the homeowner side of the schedule. So the idea was to not hold renters to a higher income standard than the bill was proposing to hold homeowners. So those are the two pieces of the schedule changes for the renters. There's a third bill that's been incorporated into Article 1, and that is a modification of Representative Dabney's House File 333, which dealt with the definition of household income, which is the income measure used in calculating the homeowner, the homestead credit refund, and the renter property tax refund. That's a very broad income measure that includes most kinds of taxable and non-taxable income. House File 333 provided that individuals who made contributions to retirement plans that were not included in their taxable income for income tax purposes would also be subtracted from household income for purposes of calculating their property tax refunds. What's in the division report is a modification of that, which allows individuals who contribute to retirement plans on a pre-tax basis to exclude from household income up to $5,500 of the amount contributed to retirement plans. That $5,500 doesn't actually appear in the bill. What appears in the bill is a reference to the maximum contribution allowed to Roth IRAs or traditional IRAs for the tax year, And that's an amount that will be adjusted for inflation over time, but it's one that moves very slowly because the IRS provision has it moving in only $500 increments. So under the current forecast, it won't change from the $5,500 until tax year 2018. That's when it would go up enough to move up to the $6,000. So instead of not being able to deduct anything for retirement contributions for household income, the bill will allow people to deduct up to $5,500. And then it does something that was not in House File 333, and it also modifies household income for retirement plan distributions. Under current law, distributions from almost all retirement plans are included in household income. And there's one kind that is excluded, and this bill would expand that definition to include that, and those are distributions from Roth IRAs. Roth IRA contributions are generally taxed under the income tax when you make the contribution, and then they are excluded from income when you take the distribution. And when Roth IRAs came in, the property tax refund definition of income was not modified to put the Roth IRA distributions into household income, even though they do indeed increase the recipient's ability to pay the refund. So with regard to the retirement income, the bill is on the front end, the contribution side, providing some recognition of the value of saving for retirement, and on the other end, the distribution end, treating everyone equally regardless of what kind of plan they're getting the distribution from. And I think, Mr. Chair, those are the provisions of Article 1.
Thank you. Ms. Dalton. Ms. Dalton, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I'm going to take you through Article 2 of the bill, which is property tax aids and credits. Sections 1 and 2 of this relate to creating a $5 surcharge on insurance on homeowners and auto insurance to fund fire pension aid. And this is exactly the language that was in House File 857, the Representative Atkins bill. The vast majority of the remaining article deals with local government aid. This is the same mechanism, the same formula that was in House File 1608, Representative Lean's bill. This is the LGA formula that was agreed on or developed in conjunction with all the city groups. The main difference between what was in House File 1608 and what is in this bill is that for the first year, the increase is only $60 million, not $80 million. And so then the inflation factor, which was in the bill, continues to be in the bill, but it's on a lower base. It's only $486 million instead of $506. And you do have a new run in your packet that shows shows the distribution. Any city that was a winner under House File 1608 remains a winner under this bill. Everyone's increase is just decreased proportionately. The section 12 of the bill is an increase to the county program aid of $28 million, and it's distributed equally $14 million apiece into each of the two parts of county program aid. Section 13 is the inflation adjustment related to the LGA. Section 14 repeals all of the extraneous provisions that are no longer needed related to the old LGA formula, and it also repeals supplemental aid payments to the Mahnomen County, the City of Mahnomen, and the Mahnomen School District that totaled $600,000. And with that, that pretty much covers Article 2.
All right. Article 3. Mr. Hines, thank you. Just to clarify, the intent is to walk through the bill today. If there is time, we'll take testimony. Tomorrow we will finish testimony and take any amendments that there may be, keeping in mind that we turn into pumpkins at 6 o'clock tomorrow because it's the legislator volunteer bipartisan event at the Dorothy Day Center. So we'll be reporting out the division report previous to 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Hines from House Research. I'll take you through Article 3 of the bill. And the first five sections of Article 3 are from Representative Hansen's bill on Board of Water and Soil Resources policy. They make a number of policy changes related to the board and the local management entities the board oversees. There's a little bit of an adjustment in their levy authority, merely to say that they can fund comprehensive water management plan, which is not in the previous language to what they could approve. Then starting in Section 6, certain property owned by an Indian tribe, this creates a property tax exemption for a single property or on two contiguous parcels of property in Minneapolis owned by a federally recognized tribal government used for tribal services. Section 7 is a property tax exemption for the Target Center. They have been paying to property taxes up to now, but they have been in a TIF district, so the city hasn't really, the jurisdictions haven't received the benefits from those tax levies in the past. Section 8 is the grants of property tax exemption for the St. Paul's city-owned ballpark under development. Section 9 is a limit on the valuation of Class 4D low-income housing property, and it limits that value to no more than $100,000 per housing unit with an indexed to inflation in succeeding years. Sections 10, 11, and 12 all relate to allowing a six-month grace period for service members on active duty who are homeowners, gives them a six-month grace period to pay their property taxes. Sections 13, 14, and part of the repealer all extend the Hennepin and Ramsey County authority to levy an additional mortgage registry and deed taxes and take away the sunset on it so that authority is permanent from now on. Section 15 is the Representative Dill's bill on the Cook Gore Hospital District, which just allows them to spend more things for equipment and other things and governs a little bit of how they divide up the levy. Section 16, the Sawyer Cemetery levy, allows Carleton County to levy within the unorganized territory of Sawyer. Section 17 extends the authority of the Northwest Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority for five more years. That was Representative Keel's provision, as is Section 8 is Representative Keel's bill to allow farmers who had to move off their homes due to flooding in 2010 to retain their homestead status indefinitely on their farm because they can no longer presumably live there because of the flooding potential. Section 19 is the chair's bill with Representative Mahoney calling for a joint governing structure for marketing, promotion, and scheduling for between the Target Center and the Xcel Energy Center. Section 20 is Representative Dowd's bill creating the Isanti Area Fire District. Section 21 grew out of the Representative Falk's bill relating to how properties used in the production of biofuels and other similar industrial processes be governed as far as what parts of the property were taxable or not. This section puts a moratorium, a one-year moratorium on those assessment practices so that assessors are supposed to retain things that they're now exempting for another year as exempt, or if they're currently regarding them as taxable, to regard them as taxable without making any changes for 1 year, to give this issue a little time to percolate, maybe. And Section 22 is a repealer. And the first part is Representative Simon's bill, which eliminates a sunset on city's authority to establish new special service districts or housing improvement areas. So currently that authority is sunsets on June 30th of 2013. This repealer repeals that sunset and makes the basically making it a permanent authorization. And that's it.
Thank you very much. Article 4. Mr. Michael, thank you. Oh, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I had a question on the bill. Would it be appropriate right
That's
now?
That's just fine.
Page 27, line 7, section 19. Was it the chair's intent with that particular section to take over the XL Center from St. Paul and hand it off to Minneapolis?
Representative Mahoney, no.
Yeah, it wasn't my intent either, but my emails have lit up over that today like you wouldn't believe.
Was it, may I ask, Representative Mahoney, was it your intent looking on page 27, line 11, that the city of St. Paul would take over the Target Center? Because you might be welcome to it. I'm not sure.
I've got a wrecking ball. I'm sure there's some 49ers in here. No,
yeah, I'm sure there are some 49ers in here. Thank you very much. Mr. Michael, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 4 is the economic development article. Section 1 is part of Representative Lincheski's Mall of America bill that expands modestly the city's current exemption from competitive bidding for facilities that are attached to a public facility. That law currently is limited to structured parking. This expands it to apply to other types of public improvements and makes it clear that they don't have to be financed only with tax increment or revenue bonds. Section 2 is Representative Lean's bill providing additional funding for the Border City Enterprise and Development funds. This has a $1.5 million biennial allocation for those programs. Section 3 is a provision that was not in anyone's bill but just eliminates obsolete language in the TIF Economic Development District Law. There are provisions that are cleanup from 2010 and the 2010 Jobs Bill, which is now expired as of last summer. Section 4 is a general law change in the tax increment law that grew out of Representative Hansen's bill for Dakota County. His bill proposed exempting Dakota County's one district from this general law restriction that prohibits using tax increments for certain types of decorative and aesthetic purpose improvements, which when they're higher cost. Instead of doing that, what this does is to strike it for all cities, not just for the Dakota County West St. Paul development. Section 5 is Representative Newton's bill that extends the longer period on the four-year knockdown rule that was enacted back in, I think, 2010. Or 2009. It was enacted in 2009 and was a six-year extension, and this essentially extends that for two more years, allowing additional time for the cities to either have development occur on the parcels or adjacent to the parcels before they're dropped from the tax increment district. Section 6 is from Representative Lincheski's bill that provides an adjustment to original net tax capacity for cities that are for tax increment districts that have large portions of their captured net tax capacity reduced because of enactment of the homestead market value exclusion. An additional restriction is added to this to limit its application a little bit more, that it, to qualify for it, the district's five-year rule either has to still be open so that the city or the authority has the ability to continue to spend increment, or the city has outstanding bonds that have been put into deficit because of the enactment of the market value exclusion. Section 7 is part of the fiscal disparities calculation for the Mall of America financing. Section 8 is the changes for the Bloomington Central Station tax increment district. There are three provisions here. These are as it was in the bill as introduced, the extension of the five-year rule to 15 years now rather than 10, allowing the city to extend the duration by 8 years, and unfreezing the original tax capacity. Section 9 is Representative Lilly's Oakdale TIF bill. This is the same version that passed in the tax bill last year, which does not include the two additional provisions that were in the bill that Representative Lilly introduced this year. Section 10 is the actual TIF provision for the Mall of America bill. Section 11 is Representative Dorholt's bill for St. Cloud that clarifies that that district is a gap district. Section 12 is Representative Hansen's bill for the Dakota County Community Development Agency's project in West St. Paul. His bill, as introduced, had a 15-year extension. This reduces it to 5 years rather than the 15, and in addition does not provide an exemption for from the prohibition on using tax increments for community facilities. Section 13 is Representative Birdall's Glencoe bill that allows a 10-year extension to pay off a deficit that the city is experiencing in two other tax increment districts. This language is essentially as introduced, but it was clarified a little bit to make it clear that the increment can only be used to pay off outstanding bonds, which I believe was the original intent. Section 14 is Representative Dills Ely bill, which, similar to Representative Erdahl's bill, allows the city to extend the duration to pay off bonds that it otherwise could not because of the decline in property values. Section 15 is Representative Ward's Maplewood bill for the 3M R&D campus. There are two changes to this. The provision that allowed the district to capture the state general tax is deleted, and the provision that allowed the city to use increment to fund a fire station that replaced two other fire stations that the city has that the city had closed is deleted. So essentially, the only use of the increment is for the 3M Research and Development Campus and related infrastructure. Section 16 is a provision that's a special law provision for Minneapolis for transit that's sort of a substitute for the Hornstein and Dean's bill that provided a general law authorization for using TIF for transit-related developments. This special law provision for Minneapolis allows the city to create a value capture district, which is not explicitly a tax increment district, but uses calculations that of revenue that are very similar to what's used for tax increment without as many of the restrictions and complications that are involved with tax increment. The city would be allowed to put up to the areas, put parcels from four separate areas in the city that are on the streetcar line that the city is in the process of planning to develop. And the increase in taxes paid by those areas would be used to then finance capital costs related to the streetcar line. So that would include planning and design, actual installation of the line. So putting down the track and acquiring the land, putting in any stations and related improvements, and acquiring rolling stock. But unlike the Hornstein and Deanville, they could not use revenues from the district for operating costs. Those operating costs would have to come from some other source. This district would have a duration of 25 years, or the time needed to repay those capital costs if it's shorter than that. Those are the provisions of Article 5, the economic development provisions, or Article 4. Article 5 contains the mining tax provisions. Sections 1 through 8 are Representative Hansen's silica sand mining tax, and this, other than with some minor technical changes, is the bill as Representative Hansen proposed it on the tax side. The key difference is that Representative Hansen's bill provided that all of those revenues would have been dedicated to various, I think, three different accounts. This provides that a fixed dollar amount will go into a special revenue account that will be used for developing model environmental standards and to provide technical assistance to counties, but the remainder of the revenue will go to the general fund. And those dollar amounts that go to that special account are listed in Section 3. It's generally $2 million a year, but there's a higher amount in fiscal 15 where it's $2.7 million essentially. Section 9 is Representative Metz's bill on taconite school aid that the committee heard that essentially eliminates the subtraction for the local property tax levy portion of that. Section 10 is from Representative Moline's bill that provides the funding for Representative Metz's bill by reducing the distribution to the fund that pays the taconite homestead credit, which generally in recent years has been overfunded. So that's reduced by 8.5 cents, which is the amount estimated that's necessary to pay for Representative Metz's bill. Section 11 reduces the TEDF fund, which is oftentimes referred to as sort of the investment credit for the taconite mines, by 10 cents. And that's used later on to fund IRRRB bonding for schools, which will come later. Section 12 is back to Representative Hansen's silica sand mining bill. This is the change in the local gravel or aggregate tax. If you recall, his bill would have doubled the tax rate under that tax. This essentially would do two things. Instead of requiring the counties to levy that up to a doubling, it would allow them to decide how much of that additional authority they want to levy. So they could levy up to the amount that was authorized in Representative Hansen's bill, but they could also do a lesser amount. The second thing it does is that it mandates all of the counties that have this authority actually impose the basic 15 cent per ton gravel tax. There are, I believe, two counties that are not imposing it now that would affect, and that would eliminate the town taxes that in a couple of cases have been imposed in those counties. There's also one other county, Houston County, that under current law for this year and next year is allowed to levy a lower tax rate. That provision is repealed. So the net effect of this is that all counties will, in that group, will levy up to the state amount, the 15 cents per ton, and that all of those counties would have authority to levy up to another 15 cent per ton, but they could choose to levy some lesser amount than that if they prefer. Section 13 is back to Representative Moline's bill, which provides a one-time distribution to the city of Hibbing to pay for water supply improvements that are necessitated by the city's need to drill a new well. Section 14 authorizes the IRRRB commissioner to issue bonds to make grants to schools in the Taconite tax relief areas for various capital projects. Section 15 is the Iron Range Fiscal Disparities Study, which will be funded by the area-wide tax rate up there rather than by state money.
Ms. Dalton. Thank you, Mr. Michaels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll take everyone through Article 6, the local sales tax article. Section 1 was Simonson's bill that clarifies that the local lodging taxes applies to the same base of as the state tax, which means that it also includes online travel agencies. Section 2, however, is a new provision that basically says that if a local government is imposing a local lodging tax that is not collected by the state, that they can only require the travel intermediary, the online company, to file and pay once a year to minimize the number of filings that these companies have to do. Section 3 is part of Representative Paymar's bill related to St. Paul. It does not extend the St. Paul sales tax, but it does allow them to use any excess money of the 40% of its sales tax dedicated to the Civic Center to other capital improvements if it's not needed for the Civic Center. This is to kind of make sure that they can actually do what was supposed to be in the Vikings bill last year. House file sections 4 and 5 are Representative Dorholt's bill extending St. Cloud's existing, the St. Cloud area existing sales tax upon approval at a general election by each of the cities. Section 6 is Representative Neuberger's bill related to the use of revenues of the local sales tax revenues for the city of Clearwater. Hopefully this will be the last time we have to hear what projects Clearwater is trying to fund with their sales tax. Makes no changes in how much they can raise. Section 7 is Representative Murphy's, part of Representative Murphy's, one of her Proctor bills, and it does not change any of the existing authorities. However, it does give the city, allows the city to file with the Secretary of State. They essentially had the same problem that Marshall had and did everything except doing the final filing of the approval with the Secretary of State, so this allows them to do that. And Section 8 allows the city of Bemidji to impose a 1% food and beverage tax and a 1% local lodging tax. This was Representative Purcell's bill, and the money will be used to fund operating and maintenance costs for the Sanford Center in the city. And that is Article 6.
Thank you very much. Article 7. Mr. Michaels?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're not going to go through either Article 7 or Article 8. Article 6. Article 7 is the provision that makes all of these technical adjustments to be, as a result of enactment of the market value exclusion, which was in the tax bill that passed last year but was vetoed. Article 8 is the Department of Revenue's department bill provisions that relate to property taxes and mining taxes. That those provisions almost all were also passed as part of the tax bill last year that was vetoed by the governor. The provisions that relate to data practices, though, were deleted and are in civil law where they presumably will reappear in a data practices omnibus bill. But the committee has heard those all before and passed them all before. Different versions of this committee has done that, so it's probably not fruitful to spend time on it.
And by weight, that's about 60 or 70% of the actual delete all amendment.
Correct.
Yes. All right. Any further questions from members? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And which staff member had Article 5?
That's probably partially me, maybe Mr. Hines, but...
Well, just to whoever the... Mm-hmm. So the Article 5, Section 3, did you say that this was the way that the bill, this bill came through this committee, the silica sand tax? That's the way we heard the bill. It wasn't modified since then?
There are some modifications. Who wants to take this? Mr. Michael?
I'm sorry, on the tax side of it, not on the... I understand the dedication was taken out of it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, the tax provisions are, you know, the changes that were... any changes that were made are just minor.
Okay. Right. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason why that sticks out in my mind is that when we heard that bill, it was like one of the few times I remember an industry coming in and saying, if you do this, this is going to cost us jobs. This is specifically what it's going to do to us. And I'm just wondering, do we think they're lying, or do we just not care? Because I was really surprised that this provision is in the bill, because they specifically said this was going to do damage. Can you just enlighten the committee as to why that's being included in there?
Certainly, Representative Garofalo. I think every time anyone in this body proposes a tax, the industry comes in and says, this will kill us, this will shutter us, this will make us flee the state. I believe I've heard some of that out of possibly your very mouth. So I think we're continuing the conversation about how do we deal with the issues around frac sand with including this provision.
Mr. Chairman, the reason why this one was different was it wasn't the industry saying it, was workers saying it. It was the people who are actually working. That's why this one struck me as very odd. It's very common for businesses and corporations to come in here and say they don't want this, but in this case, the workers were the ones who came in. Specifically, a union came in and said this is going to cost us jobs, and I'm just surprised by its inclusion in the bill. But we'll debate the bill later on. So,
sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Other questions from members regarding the delete all amendment? Representative Erickson, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michael, on the four-year knockdown rule, how many TIFs might be affected? This is Article 4, Section 5. And I noticed in the bill that it's just a minor change, but does this affect several TIF areas or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know exactly how many districts this will affect, but it's basically all of the districts that were certified between January 2005 and April 20th, 2009. So that's about a little bit more than a four-year period. That was the latter part of that was during the recession, and there were fewer certifications that were going on. We actually have records that I could determine that. The thing that's important to keep in mind about this provision is the four-year knockdown rule was a provision that was put into the original Tax Increment Act back in 1979, and it was intended to address a concern that a number of legislators had that cities were using tax increment simply as a way to capture inflation in property values. So a strategy that cities used, particularly in the late 70s, was to draw a big district, even though they weren't sure that all of the parcels in that district were going to develop. And of course, for those of us who are old enough to remember the 1970s and early 80s, that was an era where there was a lot of inflation. And so that was a winning strategy for simply adding parcels to a tax increment district and just sitting around and waiting. And of course, what happened was, the way tax increment works, if inflation increases the value of undeveloped land, that generates increment for the city. And so legislators responded to that and said, we're not going to let you do that by saying if you haven't either gotten a developer to develop a parcel or you've put infrastructure into the parcel or adjoining the parcel, like putting in sewer and water improvements or improving the streets or the sidewalks, we're going to require you to drop that parcel out of the district, and when you actually do that, then it will come in back at the new value, taking away the inflation dividend. What's happened now is we've got actually the opposite situation, where real estate values are so stagnant that in many cases this knockdown provision may actually be beneficial to a city, because they will have an undeveloped parcel in a district that's gone down in value, and so if it gets knocked down, that actually helps them because they've got a negative taken out of their. But there are some circumstances where it hurts, you know, where it hurts, and so even though this looks like it's a sort of a major exception that's going to probably affect, you know, several hundred tax increment districts, I think you're right, Representative Erickson, that there's, you know, there are probably on average a couple hundred or more districts per year that are created. Now, 2008 and 2009 were really bad years, but there are probably 200 or 300 districts that are affected. But even if they avoid getting knocked down, the benefit is going to be pretty small, because there aren't going to be a lot of parcels that are really rapidly inflating in value just because the general market is growing overall. So that, I guess that's the only thing I would caution about. This isn't, you know, it's a major policy, sort of a major policy change that affects lots of districts, but it's not going to be a huge benefit to a lot of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Seeing none, we would invite any testimony from the public. Ms. Schill? Oh, my apologies. Yes, please. That spreadsheet thingy.
Details.
Lots of details. Ms. Schill, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Kathy Schill from House Fiscal. You have in your packet a six-page spreadsheet. Pages 1 through 4 have the items for which we know the cost, and pages 5 and 6 are no-cost items. I've grouped them together in about 4 or 5 different groups. Lines 1 through 11 are property tax refund changes. You can see on line 3, let's start there with the renter's credit impact. Modifying the thresholds and increasing maximum refunds. This is from House File 2, but also portions of House File 333 and 173. The cost begins in fiscal 15 with an impact of $15.5 million, and then the tails over fiscal 16 and 17, the impact is $33.6 million. Lines 6 through 11 show the homeowner PTR changes. Line 6 in particular has about 55% of the impact associated with the threshold changes and the modification to the definition with retirement funding. Beginning in fiscal 15, the impact is $8.6 million. And for the tails in fiscal 16 and 17, $179.3 million. If you recall, House File 2, which we originally saw, those tails were significantly higher there and also on line 9. Before we get to line 9, line 8 has the fiscal note impact for the additional administration associated with these changes. Modest amounts for fiscal 14 and 15, $339,000, and for the tails, $128,000. Line 9 has the impact for the homeowner PTR increase in participation. This is the notification portion of House File 2, and this has changed since House File 2 because it's a 1 year plus a reporting thereafter. $71 million of an impact in fiscal 15 and fiscal 16 and 17, $148 million. So the overall total for homeowner PTR changes you can see on line 11. If we move further on down, and that's all of the property tax refund changes. Moving down the sheet, lines 12 through 39 are property tax aid and credit changes. This is leading off with line 14, Representative Lean's bill for the local government aid change of $60 million per year starting in fiscal 15. You can also see the cost of the inflation adjustment in the tails along with the population growth adjustment. And then we are reflecting both the property tax interactions and the income tax interactions. And line 19 has the Monoman aid sunset. I will read you the total of all of those changes to LGA in fiscal 15, $56.6 million, fiscal 16, $69.6 million, and fiscal 17, $83.1 million. Moving down the sheet on lines 22 through 25, these are the changes for county program aid. Funded at $28 million per year. Lines 23 and 24 once again have the property tax and income tax interactions listed, taking away a portion of that $28 million. The total on line 25 for CPA, $26.6 million in fiscal 15 and $53.2 million in 16 and 17. Moving to page 2, the rest of the changes associated with tax aids and credits. House on line 26, House File 515, the Border City credits. This is a one-time appropriation in fiscal 14 of $1.5 million. Line 27 is Representative Keel's bill, and this is for the flood damaged properties. We figured that there was a handful of those in. It is being scored as negligible beginning in fiscal 15. Lines 28 through 39 show the impact of Representative Atkins' bill for the insurance surcharge for fire and pension aids. The revenues are reflected on lines 30 through 32. We have separated the fire surcharge of $5 on each homeowner fire policy and the police surcharge on each auto insurance policy. I'll read you the total on line 32. In fiscal 14, revenues of $11.5 million, and that reflects a six-month figure. Department of Revenue advised us that there would be a time for collection before there could be a disbursement of funds. And so the full year impact is in fiscal 15 and thereafter of $23 million per year. The appropriations are also in the bill. That's very normal for this because we also appropriate fire and pension aids. You can see those appropriations on lines 35 and 36. They add together magically to be the exact amount of the surcharge. So the two items together, there is a net zero impact on the spreadsheet. Note on line 38, the Department of Revenue Administration, we have not reflected any cost there, although we did receive a fiscal note. There was minor costs. I think it was $37,000 in the first year and about $7,000 cost in each year that thereafter to administer the program. But it was decided that that was something that could be absorbed by the agency. Moving forward, property tax changes on lines 40 through 58. First is Representative Allen's bill for tribal-owned nonprofit property. Once again, affecting two properties, that impact is negligible on the spreadsheet. Lines 44 through 48, this is Article 7. This is the market value exclusion cleanup language that we saw last year. Actually, the fiscal impact is slightly less than it was last year at $350,000 per year. Line 49 is Representative Lencheski's Mall of America bill. Because of the varied items in that bill, there are secondary impacts. That's why you see the property tax refund and income tax interactions associated with this bill. They total $950,000 in fiscal 15 and slightly grow for the tails, fiscal 16 and 17, $2,035,000. Moving to page 3, line 53 is Representative Paymar's bill for St. Paul. There's, once again, a property tax refund interaction there that happens in fiscal 17 of $80,000. Line 55 is Representative Johnson's bill. This is the modifying the property tax due dates by 6 months for active military. We don't have a good way to estimate that. It is scored as unknown. Representative Keels, I think I have that twice on the spreadsheet. It's negligible both times. I'm not going to count it twice, I promise. Line 57 is House File 1508. This is Representative Dean's bill associated with the Target Center. And once again, this is a PTR impact. House File 1635 is on line 58. This is the change to 4D property. Once again, not good figures available. This is the impact is unknown. Lines 59 through 80 are mining tax changes, the bulk of which you will see for Representative Hansen's bill on silica sand. The revenues are reflected on lines 65 and 66, and please note, 65 is the portion that is being that will be going to the general fund, and line 66 is that portion that is going to be placed in a special revenue fund. Those totals for the general fund portion and revenue for 14 and 15 is just shy of $9 million, and into the special revenue fund, $4.7 million or so. And then in fiscal 16 and 17, the amount going to the general fund, $16.3 million, and the amount going to the special revenue fund, $4 million. We are not carrying appropriations in this bill for those items, so you'll see the revenue impact only. And line 79, actually 79 and 80, are the Iron Range Fiscal Disparities Study. That amount will be $75,000, and we've split it between the 2 years. On page 6, you'll see the totals of all these changes. Line 86 is all the changes in the division report. Fiscal 14 and 15 is $249,664,000. And for fiscal 16 and 17, $553,853,000. Our targets are listed on line 87, and line 88 shows we are slightly under target, at least for the fiscal 14-15 year. And the summary on lines 92 through 95 just shows overall spending when you compare it to the February forecast. The remaining pages, once again, as I mentioned on 5 and 6, are the remaining bills with no fiscal impact. These are mostly local bills, and so there's nothing on the spreadsheet to score them.
Any questions regarding the spreadsheet from members? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schill, the total division report, $3.2 billion, how does that compare to 5 or 10 years ago? You happen to know offhand?
Ms. Schill?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd need to look it up, but I would say 2 to 4 years ago, we were spending over $3 billion per biennium, and now for the last biennium and now this biennium, we are under that threshold.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions on the spreadsheet for Ms. Schill? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schill, where is in the bill summary the Manoman sunset?
I believe I'll have Ms. Dalton also, but it should be in Article 2 with the tax aids and credits. And
line 19.
Set a good example.
Page 1, line 19.
Yeah, I know I'm looking for them, though.
Oh, you're there.
That's Representative Rumbeck, as line 19 is the spreadsheet where the Minomon sunset is, and that has been $600,000 for the last three or so biennia. And right now I'm looking for it.
Ms. Bolton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, on page 18 of the bill, it is in section 14, paragraph B, is the Minomon the repeal of the Minomon money. It's a special law. It's not a statute.
Yes. So,
Representative Erickson
and Ms. Dalton, then that disbursement will end as of whatever.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, they will get their disbursement this year, calendar year 2013, but they will not get one in calendar year 2014, which is fiscal year 15.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Schill or other staff? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just I don't know if Representative Dowd caught you today. He caught me today. Okay, so you're aware that, just a FYI, he says that the Asante bill that we heard, they're rethinking that, I think. And, you know, I don't know your timeline, Mr. Chair, but I think he was at this very moment. When he talked to me earlier today, he thought maybe he didn't want it in the provision, but he was going to, or in the bill, but he was going to continue to talk to the various, is it fire departments? So I don't know, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to put that on the record, and I'm sure you're working with him, but he had raised an issue that it was, knew you were putting this in there for him. But that he might want to make some change. That's all I know, but I just thought I'd pass it on.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. And I spoke with Representative Dowd today, and he indicated that he does not want to progress that provision to me. Other questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Schill. With that, we have about 15 minutes and would open the floor for any comments the public wishes to give on the bill. I'd like to start with anyone who isn't paid to be here and lives more than 50 miles away. Seeing none. Not surprising. Anyone who isn't paid to be here and is within a 50-mile radius of room 10.
That's everybody.
Yeah, but they're not paid to be here. Okay. That seems to leave only people who are paid to come and watch the committee. Brevity is welcome and will be rewarded by your provision remaining in the bill. Come on down. At least remaining in the bill for today. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll try to be very brief. The first comment I'd like to make is on page 73, line 20, and this is perhaps just for staff. It makes reference to unorganized township, and earlier in the bill we corrected that in the Sawyer section. It should say unorganized territory. We're trying to get consistency in all parts of the statute, so I just flagged that perhaps. That could be part of a technical amendment tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Sewell.
My more substantive concern is on page 53, section 12, the fairly substantial change to the Hansen provision on the change in aggregate tax that now creates it to be a mandatory tax imposed by the counties. And if I understood, I was having a little hard time hearing in the back, but it appears that would trump the townships currently collecting the aggregate tax. And if that's the case, we probably need to build in a transition period for that, because the township budgets were set a couple of weeks ago at their town meeting. It's basically a two-year cycle for us. And if we've got townships currently counting on a certain percentage of that aggregate tax coming in directly, and now under this change, perhaps losing that, we'd need to build in some transition. I won't speak for the counties as to how they feel about a mandated tax versus the optional tax, but that is a very substantive change. That has not been heard at all. That's not what was in the original Hansen provision as part of the Silica bill. So I just flag that to reserve our right to perhaps need to tweak or oppose it as this bill moves forward.
All right. Thank you very much. Others?
Well,
Sorry.
The other thing, I was going to just be a messenger for what Representative Lincheski indicated. I received a couple of emails this morning. Mm. Apparently, there is, in fact, some dispute. The attorneys are trying to work it out locally. We're not involved as an association with the Isani fight, but there is a group of attorneys that are keeping me in the loop as to what their discussions are to see if they can resolve it before the end of session. But it sounds like it's coming out anyhow at this point.
And that, and again, that is just the request of Representative Dowd. If he changes his mind, we can discuss that. Representative Garofalo, thank you, Mr. Sewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Solom, do you guys want to take over the Target Center or Xcel Energy in the townships, or no?
How about Block E?
Mr. Chairman,
would you like Block E?
Technically, they already have. That's the bad news.
Representative Garofalo, are you suggesting that Minneapolis could run like a township?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see the annual meeting.
It'd be held at the Metrodome. We'll keep the dome filled for the annual meeting.
There. Yes. Yeah. All right. Next, Mr. Carlson. In the interest of efficiency, if anybody who wishes to testify just wants to come forward and grab a chair, that's fine. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson, Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 9 of the larger greater Minnesota counties and 4 of the counties here in the Twin City metropolitan area. First, I want to thank the chair and the division for making sure that the homestead property tax relief is provided directly to homeowners, and you did not undo the changes that the previous legislature had made to address the chronic underfunding of the old homestead credit. I also want to thank the chair for the $28 million for additional funding for county program aid. Given the targets in the human services area, I guess we're frankly a little bit fearful that we're going to be facing substantial costs in this area. The governor's budget also already had $8 million of additional costs being imposed on counties. And if the those committees follow through, we will have that plus our initial costs relating to the MAX expansion already passed by the legislature. We also would like to request that our appropriation be treated the same as city local government aid, in that it be indexed to provide funding that grows with our needs in the future. Do also want to thank you for the inclusion of the PERA, our MSRS funding coming from the $5 per policy surcharge. We will be incurring substantial costs for needed changes in the police and fire system, and this will only partially pay for that. Just to conclude with a couple final comments, the silica production tax, the $2 million silica sand mining account, we're appreciative that the money set aside there is to provide funding for non-mandatory or model ordinances, that nothing is being mandated of us. Also, I'm very grateful for the increased authority for the gravel tax. As far as counties and their roads are concerned, it doesn't matter whether it's silica sand or traditional aggregate. Both are causing substantial damages to our roads, and the cost that can be funded by this additional authority is appreciated. Finally, I'll just mention, again, we appreciate that Article 7 was included on the tax and debt limit adjustments. That I'll conclude.
Thank you very much. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and I'll be very brief. I just want to thank the chair for the emphasis on delivering property tax relief directly to the taxpayer through the renamed Circuit Breaker program. Our members have been strong supporters of that program through the years, and I just want to thank you for the emphasis on providing that relief directly to taxpayers. On the one other issue I just want to identify, Mr. Chair, is the reinstatement of the Hennepin and Ramsey County mortgage registry and deed taxes. Historically, those have been in statute with the sunset, and the sunset is being repealed in the bill, and And as you move forward with further discussions in this committee and onto the full tax committee, I just ask you to consider reinstating some sort of a sunset, just to have that discussion, come back to the legislature periodically and revisit whether that's the most appropriate funding source for those local activities. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Cadoon, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I will express our concern over provision we testified on earlier regarding the fracturing sand mining taxes that are being imposed. I won't reiterate all the testimony we did earlier, just to mention that, as you heard in that testimony, this tax is going to be much higher than any other tax imposed on this industry. And as the testifiers also stated, that this would, they believe, put them at a very high competitive disadvantage, and ultimately they believe result in job losses. So I just want to restate again our opposition to this tax. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Madden.
Hello, Mr. Chair,
welcome
members
to the
committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We'd like to thank the chair and the division members for recognizing that property tax increases affect Minnesotans whether they own or rent their homes, and for including provisions to ensure that low and moderate income Minnesotans aren't paying too high of a share of their incomes in property taxes. You've had a chance to hear testimony both from us and a number of organizations about the importance of the renter's credit, and we appreciate those provisions, and we look forward to working with you in the days ahead to make sure we take advantage of this reform moment to strengthen the renter's credit.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Such a quiet bunch. All right. With that, members, the intent, we'll, at this point, we'll lay House File 2 as amended over and take it up again tomorrow when we meet at 4 p.m. We'll allow a brief amount of time at that point for testimony, take amendments, and then vote on the bill previous to the 6 o'clock legislative volunteer cap. There we have it. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.